This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
With the Crusher, Jeff Crochelle. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Hey, happy St. Patty's Day, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Crush Performance. Jeff Crochelle here along with Hernan Salas. And it's the day of green. Green. Could it be the grass is greener on the other side of the fence? Well, we're going to get to that maybe a bit later today. But St. Patty's Day is such a fun day. This is one holiday that's just, there's no attachments here. Green water, green lakes, green freaking canals, green beer, maybe most importantly. And of course, you know, if you cook for the kids this morning, green eggs and ham are always a lot of fun. On my bucket list, okay, there's a couple things I'd like to do in relation to St. Patty's Day on my bucket list. I'd like to be in Chicago for a St. Patty's Day. The water turns green, there's parades, they do a great job. And Dublin, Ireland. I'm telling you, I had a buddy that went to Dublin, Ireland for St. Patty's Day. He came back a different man. And it wasn't necessarily positive. I'm telling you right now, he was changed. Maybe damaged goods. It took him a couple of years to recover. But boy, oh boy, he said it was fantastic. They know how to celebrate there. So happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. If there's one thing we'll just send out right now, do not drink and drive. Just have a ton of fun today. And that's what it's all about. So off we go. Today on the show, kids in sport. We're going to talk with Dr. Amanda Visick from George Washington University about their breakthrough research and the development of the Fun Maps, a system for identifying why kids play sport. Again, we always say, if you want to solve a problem, you got to understand the problem. And that's exactly what Dr. Visick and her group have done over at George Washington University. So we can understand how better to create programs and environments that keep kids in sports. The dropout rates are alarming. We're looking at right now between the ages of 12, 13 and 14. A lot of the research is pointing to the fact that 7 out of 10 kids are dropping out of sport. We want to know why. Again, understand the problem. We might be able to go ahead and make some strides to fix it. And then later in the show, this is a good one for me. I had an email from a Crush listener just a little while ago, and he had an incident with a coach. And now his son is no longer playing hockey. So I wanted to look into it a little bit more. In my opinion, coaches should be keeping kids involved in sport, not causing them to drop out. It's one of my biggest concerns and maybe one of the biggest crimes in sport when kids are dropping out because of coaching. So I wanted to know more. Could it be the kid? Hey, we know some kids are hard to coach. That's one of the challenges of being a coach, is figure out how do you touch and inspire the kids to stay in sport? How do you encourage them to get better and be passionate about the game, whatever it might be? And then, could it be the parents? We've all seen it before. And even if you've never coached or never been in the administration of a sports organization, even at the developmental levels, parents can sometimes be a problem. Or was it indeed the coach? Well, I touched base with this parent after the email, and it's a story I want to tell. And of course, the inspiration behind this entire episode. So I'm looking forward to that. Hernan, a big show today, St. Patty's Day. Are you a big celebrator of the Green Day?
Yeah, when I was a lot younger, obviously, you hit the Irish, here in Edmonton, you hit the Irish bars and you drink a little bit of Guinness and then you put a little bit of green food coloring in your regular beer. So, but as I've gotten older, not really Crusher, just pretty much just relax and I'm not really big into it. But like you said, going to Ireland on this, just this month alone would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'm a big beer drinker, so I like trying all the different ones. And like you said, Guinness is the go-to on this.
Yeah, most definitely. And I will have a couple today for sure, just to celebrate along with everybody else. And hey, thanks for sitting in with for the con man.
Of course.
He's out coaching today, as a matter of fact, which bodes well and ties right into the theme of our show today, kids in sport. The power of coaching, mm-hmm. Hernan. You know, have you ever had a coach that's impacted you in your development, either good or bad? Because coaching is a powerful, powerful position, but it can go both ways.
It's funny because when I was younger, I played club soccer and I had a coach who he was really hard. He wasn't a coach. Listen, he wasn't treating you like terrible, but he was just hard. He was honest with his assessments. He, you know, if you sat on the bench, he didn't have to give you an explanation. When I was younger, I took it to heart. But as I got older, I when I've had the chance to coach, I kind of coach the same way. Like, I'm a little harder. Like,
you're hard ass?
Yeah.
Like, what age group are you working with?
Well, no, like, I'm saying, like, maybe 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little different.
Hammer down.
But not to the extent where I'm like, you know, where you're that, you're, yeah, there's no communication. No, but I'm hard and I'm honest and with the assessments. And I think that's because the way I was coached with my first 2-3 coaches. Now, I said, fair, but they were just hard on you. And I mean, when you're younger, 13, 14, you kind of take it to heart a little bit more. But as you get older, I didn't mind it because I think it made me stronger.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a way to do that, too. And that's intuitive. If a coach sees an athlete that responds to that or maybe needs that, mm-hmm, that can be a powerful tool. And there is an art to coaching. You know, I totally respect all the parents and volunteers who get out there and just allow kids to play. And I remember back when I grew up, you know, some of the greatest coaches I had just were there so we could play. Not a lot of instruction, not a lot of skill development. They just organized it so we could show up and play ball, play hockey, play soccer. I will say this. I did have a couple coaches along the way that impacted me. One not so well, and one was a major, mm-hmm, major influence on even what I'm doing today. And in high school, I was the captain of the soccer team, right? We didn't have football in my school. So, you know, we played other sports. Hockey, baseball were huge. Volleyball, basketball were big, big sports, and soccer, of course. And there were issues, again, teachers volunteering to coach, and the coach wouldn't show up. So we wound up, I wound up taking ownership and running the practices and stuff, and it worked out well, but not a lot of positive influence from the coach at that point, which might have worked out well because, you know, you learn how to run a practice and mm-hmm, rally the guys and get some work done. And we were a pretty good squad. On the other side, later in life at university, I had a coach who was one of my profs, who was a world-class Canadian track coach. And what he taught me and how he taught us really influenced my mindset when it comes to human performance and exercise physiology. He changed the way I thought about athlete development and human performance. Just fantastic stuff. And he wasn't even a coach. I was in one of his classes, and I worked full-time at university when I went to school, and I was around him all the time. He was an ex-Olympic pole vaulter. And I remember we were sort of going through the decathlon at the time, mm-hmm, and I was like ranked third or fourth, and he's going over the numbers one day, the whole group is standing there. He goes, Mr. Crochelle, in third place with so-and-so points. He goes, Mr. Crochelle, you have plenty of potential. You know what potential means? And I go, well, he goes, it means you're horse shit right now. But if you practice a little, you might be okay. And I tell that story to the kids now, and he was joking around, of course, but man, he was a great coach for me. Just really, really taught us well. A lot of fun. So, you know, the question of today, the text question of the day, get to us 10-12-60 on Twitter at Jeff Crush, or you can drop us an email, Crush Performance. Who was the biggest influence for you in keeping you involved in sport? Was it a parent, coach? Was it teammates or the organization? Some of the organizations out there were really, really powerful in keeping kids involved. Just good, fun, developmental environments. And what do you guys think? Did you have a coach? And did that coach influence you good or bad? Get to us. I'd like to hear from you. And that's kind of what today's show is all about.
I guess I'll ask you, you've been involved in sports, so have I for a long time. I think there's a big difference between a good coach and then there's people that stand behind the bench and that are just good motivators.
Right.
And I think for me as a personally, I would prefer a coach. Yeah. Regardless of how he is, than a motivator, because I think a motivator, which is good because you want to motivate, especially if you're younger, but at the same time, you're not getting a dose of reality if you do make a mistake. If you say, hey, Hernan, you know what? Next time, try to do this. Do you know what I mean? So I always prefer the coaching more than the motive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Definitely. I think it depends at the level you're at as well. We know we're going to talk to Dr. Amanda Visick from George Washington University. They've identified 81 factors that determine why kids play sport. Mm-hmm. 81 fun determinants of why kids play. And there's 11 of those that are directly related to coaching and the influence of coaching. And one of those, I could tell you right now, was a coach that's knowledgeable about the sport.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a big point. I think for the younger kids, you know, depending on the age group, maybe, exactly, Hernan, motivation and fun is the key at certain levels.
Yeah.
But if we look at that very critical age group, that 12 to 15 year old age group where puberty is happening, body's changing, mm-hmm, kids are developing at different rates. Sport changes there as well because we have specialization, travel teams, and you're not playing with your buddies anymore.
Exactly.
A coach has to be a really special person there to really identify with all the different athletes on a team. And you've got to be well-rounded. But most importantly, I think you have to be aware. But when kids decide they want to focus in on a sport, it's so important to have a good understanding and knowledge of the game you're coaching.
100%.
And there's a lot of courses you could take out there. And, you know, we know that typically the coaches are parents of kids who are playing the game. YouTube and a lot of the online resources have changed how volunteer coaches can go about running a practice or managing a team.
Yeah, and now, especially in soccer, I know being involved in it and playing and helping coaching and all that, that there's so many courses now for beginner coaches. And there's levels where you can run a beginner practice, say community league. If you want to get into club, it's advanced training. So there's a lot of courses and stuff going around this city alone where you can improve on your coaching.
Yeah, no question about it. And online as well. And everywhere we go, coaching is the key. And so today, coming up right after the break, we're going to talk to Dr. Amanda Visick about her fun maps, a breakthrough strategic tool we can use to build environments that are conducive to keeping kids in sport. And one of the great byproducts of having more kids staying involved, we get more high performers. So we'll talk about that right after this. Later in the show, we're going to visit with one of our listeners who had a son drop out of hockey after running with a coach. We're going to find out what it's all about. Stick around, everybody. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kershaw, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Today, we are talking kids in sport on this St. Paddy's Day. A very, very important conversation as we're seeing about 70% of kids through the age 12, 13, 14, and up to 15 dropping out of sport. We want to know why. Are they not having fun? Well, we know the number one reason they do play is having fun. But understanding why they play may help us curb this dropout rate. And doing some fantastic research out of the George Washington University is Dr. Amanda Visick, who's developed a very, very unique tool called the Fun Map. So we can use to develop environments at every single age where kids not only have fun, but want to be involved. Dr. Visick, thanks for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. And, you know, I think about development in sport and youth development and, you know, why kids play sport. You think it would be a real easy formula to create environments where kids get out and just enjoy it. But for some reason, it hasn't been quite that easy historically.
No, that's absolutely true. It's interesting because, you know, all of us that are involved in sport as adults typically have come up through some sort of youth sport system and have extensive experiences as children and adolescents, maybe even as young adults playing sport. And, you know, intuitively, we know that the number one reason why we play, and the science shows this as well, and that we continue to play is because it's fun. But when it comes to actually drilling down into how do we construct the most fun experiences for kids to keep them engaged in sport as long as possible, that seems to be a bit of a big question mark.
Yeah. Dr. Visick, don't you think that developmental sport has taken a very interesting turn here? Let's say in the last 5 years, we could even probably go back a decade. Developmental sport, I think, really took a hard left or a hard right, depending on how you look at it, when it became a industry where there were incomes, where there were people paying their mortgages in their cars, running programs in developmental sport. And I think as much as there's some benefits in that sort of an environment mm-hmm. and program model, there's also some big, big drawbacks. And I think one of the things that we've seen, you know, across the board is sort of this inability for kids to play multiple sports and this whole idea of development sport being a monetary industry has really changed the landscape, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's part of what drives the professionalization of youth sport, you know, as a monetary industry. It's really unfortunate because when we get into that realm of things, I think one of the things that is very much sort of gets lost in the mix of everything is the voices of the children, right? That's why we're all there, whether we're coaches, parents, you know, coaching ed, executive directors, you know, whomever it is, we're all there in the interest, in the best interest of the child and the child athlete. And that really sort of gets lost when you get into these, you know, other grander, grander things that, that end up driving the youth sport landscape.
We're talking with Dr. Amanda Visick from the George Washington University. She's done a ton of research in leveraging children's physical literacy in creating some of the most fun sport participation models possible. And I think that's a real, real interesting area of study, especially when we look at the dropout rates that we're seeing now, Dr. Visick, in North America, you know, through those incredibly important developmental ages, 12, 13, and 14, the dropout rates, they're not going down. They're alarmingly high. And some research is showing that they're as high as 70% through that age range. And that's a big, big problem, well beyond sport when we look at just the general health of our population.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's really where my research comes into play, is trying to understand youth sport participation and specifically retention of children's participation, not only in their childhood, but through their adolescence, as part of this, you know, solution to this public health crisis. It's really not just a North American problem, but it's also a worldwide problem when we talk about dropout and retention when it comes to really sort of any physical activity, for sure. For me, I think knowing that, not only from my own experiences, but the scientific literature supports this as well, is that fun is the number one reason why kids play. And so if we want to look at all of this from a public health perspective when it comes to participation, then I think that is really where the focus needs to be. And it's drilling down and figuring out, how do we actually construct these experiences so that we can optimize fun for kids so that they want to keep coming back and playing.
Yeah, and I agree. It's so, so critical. You know, I've spent the majority of my career at the professional sporting level in baseball and hockey and professional football. And it's true there as well. Those guys, when they're having fun, they play better. Bottom line, when things aren't fun anymore, it gets to be quite, quite difficult. Though the goals and objectives at the highest level of the sport are quite different, winning is a big priority. But fun is still a major, major key there. And I think that stands true across the sporting world. Dr. Visick, you have a really, really interesting combination in terms of your professional background. Department of Exercise and Nutritional Sciences. Could there be a better match on the planet right now based on what we're facing in terms of obesity? We know the importance of nutrition, and matching that nutrition with exercise and being active, so important. How important is, I guess, maybe our minor sport models in impacting the overall health of our society? It's a big, big tool, I think, that we're underestimating. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when we think about sport participation, a lot of times people think, you know, they focus on elite, Olympic level, professional level sport. But when you look at the grander landscape of sport participation, the largest number of sport participants that we have are at the youth level. And from a sport development perspective, we have to really, we've got to do a better job of getting it right at the younger and earlier stages in sport development if we're going to continue to have any success or enhance success when it comes to the more competitive and more elite levels of sport as well.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, creating that environment where the athletes are having fun and want to stay in sport is so important. And the great spinoff of that, and even if it's not one of the main objectives, but the great spinoff of a really smart developmental program where kids are having fun and enjoying sport and stay in sport, is you actually will wind up with probably more high performers that pursue sport to higher levels. And not only that, we have that retention where people just play sport to enjoy it for the rest of their lives, whether they pursue some other professional avenue, whether it be manual labor or working in an office, mm-hmm. It becomes such a big, big part of lifelong health. And it starts with the kids. So let's start there, Dr. Visick, with your fun maps. Now, this is a major breakthrough. I think it's one of the latest sports science advances that really do shed light a tangible way on how we should be developing our youth sports models. And I really, really like it. Maybe describe to us how you came about or how the idea of the fun maps came around and how you pursued it to the point where it's at right now?
So what we did was, you know, sort of looking at the scientific literature and knowing that fun is the number one sort of motivator or driver of continued sport participation, you know, we said, again, like, how do we actually go about constructing the most fun experiences for kids? And there wasn't a model or a theoretical framework even to help guide coaches and parents and clubs and how to do this. And so what we did was we said, you know what, let's just put the power of the science in the hands of the most important stakeholders when we're talking about youth sport participation, and that's the kids, right?
Yes.
So we went into the field, and we specifically worked with soccer players because of just the huge saturation of soccer participation in our area. And because of the rigor of the scientific approach that we were using, it was very time intensive, resource heavy. So we really wanted to be able to make inroads and good rapport with the clubs that we were going to be working with. And so from a feasibility standpoint, that's what made the most sense. And so the first stage of our research, we went into the field and we worked with hundreds of players, boys, girls, for rec as well as travel, more competitive leagues, and younger and older kids as well. So we gathered data from kids as young as 8 all the way up to age 19. And we also engaged parents and coaches as well. And what we did was we asked them, you know, one thing that makes playing sport fun for players is, and we had them complete that sentence then with as many ideas as they could think of when it came to the driving force of fun for them. And so once we gathered all of that data, took it back to the lab, we analyzed it, and what we were able to find was that there was a discrete list, essentially, of 81 specific fun determinants that were representative of the hundreds and thousands of ideas that were generated from all the players, coaches, and parents. And so even at that stage of our research, it was exciting, right? Because now we have this concept of fun that has essentially been operationally defined by the youth sport community, mm-hmm. that was 81 very specific actionable behaviors. And so when you think about, you know, our ability to construct these environments, that essentially is the starting point for understanding this roadmap. And so the second phase of our research, we then took those 81 determinants and we went back into the field with the players, coaches, and parents. And, you know, we said, you guys did a phenomenal job of defining fun, right? You guys were able to identify 81 specific fun determinants. Now we need your help in sorting all of these ideas that you came up with to help us understand, you know, more conceptually, how do these ideas fit together? And then also, you know, tell us what is most important or least important among these 81 determinants. And so the kids, parents, and coaches engaged in essentially what's called a sorting activity. So we placed all of the determinants, all 81, each one on a single index card that was laminated. And essentially, if you can sort of visualize, right, each player gets their own deck or stack of fun determinants. And they essentially just sat there and they pile sorted, right, each of the ideas into different groups. And so we said, as you're sorting all of these ideas together, we're going to give you a post-it pad as well, and we want you to name the piles that you're making. And so after they did that, then they went through and basically, like on a survey instrument, they rated in terms of importance from 1 to 5 how important each of the 81 determinants are. And the way that we framed that for them was we said, you know, if there's 81 specific things that make playing sport fun for you, they can't all be equally important, right? So we need you guys to help us differentiate what is most important and least important. And so then they completed the rating activity. And so once we gathered all this data, we took it back to the lab, analyzed it, we were able to produce essentially these three-dimensional fun maps that visually represent all 81 ideas, how they were collectively sorted together, and then in three dimensions, be able to use a layering approach to these different factors that emerge to really be able to just visually, you know, at first glance, just based upon this fun map, we can then decipher what is most important and what is least important.
It is just a fantastic work, and what a massive undertaking. And you're right, so exciting. We're talking with Dr. Amanda Visick, Associate Professor in the Department of Exercise and Nutrition Sciences at George Washington University, about her breakthrough model that's called the Fun Maps. It's providing sort of pictorial evidence-based blueprints for the fun integration theory in developmental sports, Dr. Visick. And this is great because this comes right from, so to speak, the horse's mouth. How great is it to focus on maybe the three most important groups in this entire model, the kids, the parents, and the coaches? And I know from my research and reading all of the work you guys have done, one of the most important components in this whole thing was the coaches and their ratings in terms of those fun determinants. That was a real interesting outtake, finding where the coaches and the coaches' involvement in the big picture came out in the 81 specific ratings. And I think that's a powerful message to send to every minor sport organization.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so one of the things that, one of the big messages, right, that the fun maps show us, just as you know, so eloquently described in terms of like this visual representation of all of this very robust data, is that those 81 determinants were sorted, right, into 11 specific tiles or groups, if you will. And so we call those the fun factors. And so positive coaching was one of the 11 fun factors. And so we had trying hard as a fun factor, positive team dynamics, followed by positive coaching. So those were the top three. Mm-hmm. Learning and improving came in at fourth, followed by determinants of game, practice, team friendship, mental bonuses, game time support. And then at the very bottom, we have team rituals, and finally swag.
Swag, and it's all about the swag. Well, that's interesting to take all of that and group it into 11 dimensions that we can understand a little bit more. And then it was broken down further into, I think, four fundamental tenets of fun for youth in sports. So this is a really great tangible breakdown. But isn't it interesting to see how high the coaching ranking sort of depicted the influence of the coach with those young players?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we talk about positive coaching, the way that the kids define positive coaching with respect to fun is a determinant, one of, you know, I think it's like 12 different determinants of positive coaching. First and foremost, a coach, you know, treating players with respect, following a coach that is really knowledgeable about the sport. And so one of the things that's really, I think, key there is you have knowledge that's becoming, you know, synonymous with fun. And that really feeds into the idea of learning and improving, which is the next fun factor. So when we have a coach that is respectful, is knowledgeable, who really serves as a really great role model for the kids, that is really encouraging, that is very good at providing clear, consistent communication in terms of coaching instruction. Kids also identified, you know, coaches that allow them to make mistakes, but are still encouraging and positive. Coaches that are approachable, they're easy to talk to, they're friendly. Even coaches that are able to, you know, get off the sidelines during practice and jump into the drills and the different activities, they really enjoy as well. So I think the kids have done really a phenomenal job of breaking down from their perspective, you know, what in a coach makes it fun.
Yeah, and that's great. I think every coach should see that list. Really, honestly, it's such a powerful list, and that's coming right from the people that were, you know, in charge of in terms of development. So that was really powerful. Dr. Visick, I also wanted to ask you about this, the third group involved here. We had the kids, the coaches, and the parents. I mean, the parents are a really big influence here, and it's not always on the positive side. What were your findings in terms of parent and parent involvement?
So it's interesting, right? Because I think with all of the challenges of youth sport, we oftentimes, our first impression, our automatic thought when it comes to parents and sport is all of the sort of negativity surrounding that.
Right.
And one of the things that we found that was particularly interesting is that when we compared the players to the parents in terms of their overall sort of rank ordering of the relative importance of the 11 different fun factors, that players and parents were relatively sort of seeing everything eye to eye, which means that, you know, for them, the parents are saying that, yes, you know, we understand that for kids, trying hard, positive team dynamics, positive coaching, and then maybe even, you know, game time support, they tend to sort of rate themselves and their own involvement as being higher on the scale, which makes sense. But relatively speaking, the kids and the parents are on the same page. What was very striking in our data was that the kids and the coaches were on the same page in terms of the relative importance of how they ranked all 11 fun factors at the younger level. So say, you know, when we're talking about soccer from, you know, U8, U9 up to U12, U13. But beyond that, when we talk about the more, you know, the older kids, the adolescent kids, there was a striking drop off in terms of how things were rank ordered. And there was a lot more discordance between the older adolescent players and their coaches. And so we find that quite interesting because now we also have these visual representations of these group differences between the players, parents, and coaches that I think help us to better understand specifically what factors are might sort of be driving attrition when we talk about, you know, the youth sport experience and participation. Because we can see sort of where that shift occurs from the younger kids to the older kids and how we likely need to get the coaches on the same page in terms of how the kids rank order those 11 fun factors, because that's the way in which we're going to be able, or they're going to be able, meet those kids' fun needs.
Ooh, I can see it right now. You know, as those young kids are changing, puberty's happening, skill levels are differentiation. There's kids who are serious about winning. Kids just want to play and have fun. That is a really, really tough time in sport. And maybe that resonates to why we have such a high dropout rate at through those ages. And this could be a really, really solid answer, Dr. Visick.
I hope so. I mean, that's the goal, really, right? Is to do this really rigorous science and to be able to put it in the hands of the stakeholders to be able to drive and improve the youth sport experience, I think will just have, you know, compounding positive outcomes.
There's no question in my mind, Dr. Visick, such great research. Listen, thank you so much for your time today. As a parting note, where you're at with the fun maps and all of your research right now, what do you feel are the next steps now? Now that the research and data and the models are out there, we have to implement them, of course. But in your mind, sort of being behind the scenes and one of the masterminds of this whole thing, what are the next steps in the big picture?
Well, I mean, we have a wonderful visual model through the fund maps and all the data that has really formed the fund integration theory. So we have a great understanding now of fun, but the flip side when we talk about youth sport participation is, you know, what is not fun? And so we have a bunch of data that we also collected in another phase of our research that really maps all the determinants of what really gets in the way of fun. So I think, you know, once we're able to finish analyzing that data and to disseminate that out into both the scientific and the youth sport community, then we'll have a truer understanding of both sides of this fun phenomenon.
Dr. Visick, thank you so much for this. It's just so important. I think your research not only highlights why kids are having fun and why they're staying in sport, but things we can do to help them enjoy it more. And coaching certainly comes down to it. Thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, it's been fun.
All right, everybody. A fantastic conversation right there. When we come back, we're going to talk to a Crush listener whose son has dropped out of hockey because of an incident with a coach. Was it the athlete? Was it the parent? Was it the coach? Well, I've been in touch with them, and it's a story I want to share on the air here. That's coming up right after this break. Stick around.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. Crush Performance. We're your weekly show for sport performance information. Hernan Salas here. If you want to get in touch with us, please do so. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on Facebook, Crush Performance. Today, we're talking kids in sports. But before we get back, hey, we had a little vehicle incident here this last week. And I want to say, I just want to do a big shout out to the guys over at Auto Rescue. They really, really saved us. Really great guys. They came out and helped us out, and me and my wife. And they were fantastic. Shared some great stories about the kind of work they do. Listen, 24 hours a day, towing services. They're your Edmonton roadside assistance team. If you're locked out or need some help, Auto Rescue guys, got to thank them. Just tremendous, tremendous service. And also, if you see the tow truck or the police or the emergency response teams on the side of the road, please slow down. Some of the horror stories I heard from the guys at Auto Rescue were really eye-opening. So look out for our safety workers there. So thanks to the guys at Auto Rescue. Okay, today we are talking kids in sports. Just coming off of a great, great conversation with Dr. Amanda Visick from George Washington University about their new system called Fun Maps, looking at why kids play and how we can create environments where kids want to stay involved in sports. One of the most important factors in their 81 determinants of why kids play were the 11 attributed to coaching. And earlier this month, I got an email from one of our listeners talking about this very subject. This email was the inspiration behind this episode of Crush Performance. A young hockey player dropped out of hockey because of an experience with a coach. And I want to welcome our longtime listener, Gary, to the show. Gary, thanks for coming on to share your story today.
Hey, Jeff. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey,
this is
a really
good topic.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I think, you know, it affects more people than we realize. And you know what? A developmental sport is supposed to be just a fun environment, right? I mean, we're supposed to be encouraging kids to get out there and be social and have fun. That's the name of the game. Unfortunately, sometimes it seems, Gary, we get a little more serious than we need to be. Would that be safe to say in your eyes as a parent of young athletes?
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna walk through kind of the story, and you've kind of segued into, well, you know, what the high level of what's really happened. But I do see that. I see that, you know, it's that cliche of my kid's gonna make it to the show, and we all know that's not the case in a large percentage of it. But we see it resonate through, and it changes our behaviors. I really believe that. You know, the segment earlier was really great. I had a chance to listen in, and the story I'm going to share with you here is the exact reciprocal of what coach and what parents' role in sport should be. So I think there's a lot of work in this space to be done.
Yeah, there certainly is. So when you sent me your email, I was very intrigued, and of course, you know, just sort of being neutral, and I've been involved, you know, with my kids and at the highest level of sport, but I've been involved in sport for a long time. So immediately I start to think, not knowing you, of course, or your son or your coach, I start thinking, okay, what could be the issues here? Could it be maybe the kid's hard to coach? Could it be maybe the parents are helicopter hover parents that are maybe too involved? Could it be the coach really stepped out of line. And that happens all too often. And, you know, when we got on the phone earlier, Gary, and I heard your story, I wanted to bring it to the air because this is just a blatant, I guess, maybe breakdown in the system. So maybe just run us through and our listeners through your story so maybe everybody can relate to what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And I really appreciate you guys taking the time to bring this onto the air. So I'm, you know, kind of really high level. It gets down to conversation between coach and whether the coach did or didn't have good intentions, the approach and ultimately, you know, his response to our response or our son's response really became unglued. So it involves player to coach, athlete to parent, parent to coach. And then it brings in this other factor that I think we haven't really spent a lot of time to understand, social media. And when I was growing up playing sports, and you're probably the same way, we didn't have that variable to factor into, you know, how do we deal with the angst of social media in sports? So that comes into this conversation as well. And so to really sum it up and not spend a lot of time on it, I know we're a short window here. It was a one-to-one conversation between an assistant coach and our son. You know, they have a group team chat thing, and they banter back and forth, and they're smack talking, and it's all in good fun.
Yeah, that's
and that's how it should be, and that's part of the whole experience and the whole environment. This coach, and like I said, whether or not he had good intentions or not, he took it upon himself to stir up a one-to-one conversation with our son through this chat social media app, and after we reviewed it with our son, because he came to us and he said, I don't know what to do with this. This is really, really something I'm not comfortable with, and it ended up being, you know, some very intimidating statements, and you know, it was disciplinary and things that were outside of what a coach's conduct really in a lot of eyes should be. So we took that upon ourselves to, you know, one, like you said, okay, what's the real root cause here? Is it our kid? Is it us? You know, what's going on? We wanted to make sure we had a real good approach to this and we weren't stepping out of line. When we took it, you know, at head, and we went and had a, you know, attempted to have a face-to-face with this coach, I'd love to tell you and your listeners what he said, but I'm not going to because that's just not appropriate. But he became unglued. And, you know, he really became an intimidating force to not only our son, but to us as parents. And, you know, it you know, in a one fell swoop, in one instance, turned off our son from wanting to be part of that environment and wanting to be part of that team. He just said, you know what, I can't be around this guy. And I really need to think hard whether I'm going to go back or not.
Yeah, such a tough situation. And again, I talked to you at length about this off the air, but to give everybody an idea, this could have been a very, very important coachable learning moment. You know, social media is a big, big part of our youngsters' lives now. And through sport, it's a great way just to raise awareness and steer them in the right direction. This was handled very inappropriately. And you're right, whether his intentions were good or not, it didn't resonate well. It wasn't handled well. But yeah, Let's talk about this. You know, looking back, you had the run-in with the coach. Your son's decided to quit. You went to get some answers, or at least to move forward. You went to the organization to follow up.
Right. And that's really, I think, where, you know, outside of the story and the event, what I really, you know, I think is the more important key, and not that I'm an expert by any means in this realm, but how we handled it or how we approached, you know, how do we handle this? And I liked what Dr. Amanda said in the previous segment around, you know, the kids need to have a voice. And if they don't feel like they have a voice, it's our role as parents to make sure that they have a voice. And so we stood up and we did that. We went to the minor hockey executive, and power to them. They're volunteers. They step in. They spend hours outside of their regular workday to make sure that this stuff runs seamlessly. And we had a really good conversation with them. But before we even got to there, it was things like invoking personally for myself the 48-hour rule, and how did I conduct myself, and right, how did our kid again conduct himself, and making sure that all those measures had been evaluated before we really, you know, pushed a response or pushed a statement to the board or the disciplinary committee is what it turned out to be, and addressed it in that fashion. And I think, you know, if we look at, you know, what came out of that and how we addressed it and the conversations that were elicited from this event, you take a negative and a very bad situation where, you know, our son has lost the experience of sport and what it's supposed to be, and we've tried to gain some positive outcomes out of it.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Gary, we only have a couple of minutes left here, but I have a text that came in. It said, can you ask Gary if he thinks assistant coaches and coaches should take the same ethics classes across the board? So, I mean, this is a maybe a preventative step to start this off. So maybe coaches who are unarmed have at least a little resource to handle situations like this a little better.
Yeah, and so it's actually really interesting that that comment came in. So a couple main outcomes that have come from this. So we take a positive and we say, you know, this doesn't all just kind of fall flat on its face. There's more awareness around social media. They're actually putting some procedures and some guidelines in on code of conduct for social media between parents, coaches, players. The other one is assistant coaches and how we're evaluating and even character assessments for assistant coaches going forward. So kids in the future, you know, don't have individuals like this that just don't have the skills or aren't the proper encouraging factor falling through the cracks and having these incidents occur. So those are two real positive things that I saw came out of this.
Great stuff. Well, it sounds like you handled it well. We always are saddened when a young athlete drops out of sport. We're hoping maybe that when he sees the impact this has had, maybe he'll step back in and get back involved again. That would be, I guess, the best outcome we could possibly hope for. But these are some positive changes for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what we're hoping for.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, hey, thanks for sharing that story. I think a lot of parents can resonate with that today. Gary, appreciate your time, man. Appreciate the emails.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. There you go, everybody. Very, very important conversation. That's from one of our listeners, an email that came in. And again, if you have a comment, idea, or topic you'd like us to look into, email us. We'll respond. If we like the topic, we'll dedicate a segment, maybe even an entire episode like this one, to your idea. So I want to thank Dr. Amanda Visick for coming on the show today. I want to thank Gary for coming on and sharing his story. And we're hoping that his son gets back involved in the game. And it sounds like there's some good outcomes when it comes to not just maybe screening coaches, but getting resources for coaches so they can handle these situations maybe a little better, arm them with knowledge, I guess. Hey, coming up in the next few weeks on Crush Performance, listen, the War on Sugar next week, and on the 31st, it's the Low Tide Crush Baseball Extravaganza. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
I do think we're living in an era with a lot of young guys that want to make a splash. If, as a GM, I can go out, sign this guy, and make this move, then I've done my job, and then it's all on the coach if it doesn't work out. Well, again, it's a little bit of playing, you know, sides to the owner, and it usually doesn't work out. The key to being successful is working together. Painstaking evaluation of your roster. And how can you make it better? And sometimes making it better is signing the players that you do have. But in contracts, they're often backloaded. And so a player has a balloon payment that's just too high that you've got to reduce down. And player says, I'm not going to reduce it down. I'm going to see what I can get on the market. I'm going to jump and play for another team, get more money. Completely understandable. It would be foolhardy for a player to do anything but.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.